Welcome to the Jungle Brothers podcast. It's your host, Joey, and today I'm joined by Esther Mason from Jungle Cabaretta Beach, which if you've been following the show for a while, you'll know her already, and Scott Waters, friend of Esther's, collaborator, and the founder of Life Changer Foundation. Life Changer Foundation is all about empowering the youth, and Esther and Scott have been working together on some really cool projects. I wanted to learn more about Life Changers Foundation and how they plan to have an impact on 1 million youths' lives annually, which is a super big goal, and they're actually going to get there. Amazing story and a really cool chat. I hope you like it. There's a lot of parallels between what we're trying to do with our gyms for mostly adults and what Life Changer is trying to do with the youth of Australia and around the world. I hope you enjoy the episode and please share it with a friend. Mate, I'd like to start by just learning what was the force for you to start Life Changer?
It's the simplest but toughest question that you always get asked. I guess I preface my answer by saying I'm not sure we need reasons to do good things. And I think this is a really good thing that, you know, my whole team are involved in. But there's not one catalyst moment. There's many experiences, there's a lot of amazing role models and mentors and family members, you know, in my journey that were around that space. So, you know, I start with probably my grandmother, magnificent Croatian lady who pretty much raised me alongside mum and dad. And that was a house where the front door and the back door was always open, and every time you would go there, there would be someone else at the table that, you know, needed one of her magnificent meals or just a place to be. So you grow up around that. You know, my dad is a really pretty stoic sort of guy, quite quiet. I laughed the other day because he's got an Instagram account with three followers on it, which was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Has he got any posts?
He actually commented on one of our Life Changer posts, which I just about fell off the chair. But he's the sort of guy that doesn't say a lot, but the thing that I respect most about him is whenever there's been a time in our family where someone's needed support, he's always stepped into that space and not stepped away from challenging times, and he does it in a really quiet way. So that's the thing that I admire about him the most. So I've had him as my main role model, so I guess that's aspirational for me to have some of that. Mum worked for 20 years, combination as a nurse, and then with young trauma, car crash victims, ultimately wheelchair bound, kids that have been through horrific accidents. So I'd go in there as, particularly when I was an athlete, and you'd be playing games, you know, in wheelchairs with, you know, teenage kids that have been through some pretty challenging accidents, etc. So all of that's around you. So somewhere within all of that, my why, supporting the underdog or someone that is in a challenging place, if you've got that opportunity, that to me is time well spent, and that is should be the core of human nature, to look after each other and be kind. So I've been really lucky with many things that have come my way. But I don't like what I see happening around young people, and that sort of inspired myself and Trevor Hendy, my co-founder, to just look at the area and see if we could, in some way, without sounding, you know, egotistical or like we have the whole solution, because we don't, but just in some way to lean into that space and have a positive impact. So we're still growing. We're getting bigger. We'll work with about 70,000 young people this year in workshops in Australia and New Zealand, which will actually make us the biggest youth workshop provider in Australia.
Wow.
Yeah, which is not a target, but it's a nice signpost.
Yeah.
But, and then we've now got digital resources that'll get to about 250,000 kids on top of that through teachers. So, Yeah, we're having an impact and we want to have more. But so my why is why not? If I get to the end of my journey, whenever that is, and I'm able to look back, I actually said to a great friend of mine last night at dinner, you know, in 20 or 30 years' time, I'd love to be sitting in small bar or cafe in the corner with 20 people that have all lent into this space, and you can just have a quiet conversation and go, that was pretty cool what we were able to do, and to watch where that ripple effect of positivity has gone. And we see it every day in every workshop. So, yeah, you get a choice where you spend your time. I love where I'm spending my time.
A couple of things interesting to sort of ask about there. The first is the Croatian grandma. Now I know where the immense bone structure comes from.
And the stubbornness.
I've never known like an Australian Croatian of Croatian descent to not be extremely handsome. Just to know.
I would argue and say all Croatians, myself included, I shouldn't say this, but they would call us box heads, you know. So thank you for the compliment, but yeah, I proudly wear the square head of my grandfather.
But I guess you mentioned something there that was like, made me want to ask, you had these influences and these role models. Was there something taught to you, like a deliberate process, to make you see the importance of helping others? Or was it just a passive kind of thing that was in your environment?
I think a lot of it was just osmosis, and the people that you surround and the, you know, the community that you're in. You know, I've spent a lifetime around sport as, you know, an aspiring young athlete to a professional athlete to a coach. There's probably 30, 40 years of that experience. So what you take out of that is clearly the importance of environment and the impact that that has on any individual. So if you don't get the environmental inputs right, it's really hard for a person to maximise their potential or be their best, whatever that may be. That was really amplified home to me. I spent 4 years working in Bankshire Hill Detention Centre in Perth. So 13 to 18 year old, 95% boys, 70% Indigenous. And I walked out of that experience, one of the greatest jobs I've ever had. But I walked out of that experience feeling 98% of those kids want to be good and wanted to be great, wanted to be their best and wanted to be full and purposeful and living a great life. Many of them, and this is not making an excuse because I also believe that every person still has choice. So I'm not taking accountability away or taking their actions away. Some of them made some poor choices. But with the right environmental factors surrounding most of those young people, they would be in a much better place. 2% have medical challenges that make it really difficult. But most of them just need a good environment. So everything that I've done, the thread through many of the things that I've been involved in, sport, juvenile detention centre, teaching, mentoring, founder of our foundation, is, well, what are the contributing factors that we need to surround a young person with for them to be full and be awesome? That's how I sort of break it down. So that's what our workshops do. It's just how many different ways can we surround young people with learning opportunities, self-development opportunities, tools that they can use to overcome challenges. Because life is awesome, but life will throw shit at you. And I'm glad that it does, because from those challenges, it's where character's built, it's where your values are tested, it's where your choices are tested. I'd hate to live a full life that was perfectly linear progression. I don't think it exists. So I think the message is for young people, and again, I'm not going to preach, I'm just talking from my own ups and downs, of which I've had many, is you're good enough to rise no matter whatever occurs to you. It'll be tough at times. We do an amazing activity with kids, just call it a life graph, and we ask them, not for specifics, but it's like pick three high points in your life and pick three low points, put them on a graph, and now just chart the graph out. And they all look at, 30 kids will look at the graph, right? And so what do you see? And I go, oh, they look around and say, we've all, their graphs are different, but they're all the same. You know, there's all ups and downs. I go, what does that mean? Oh, we're actually not alone. We're all facing different stuff at different times. Sometimes we're up, sometimes we're down. What do you notice after every high point? Oh, well, life's going to probably throw something at you at some point. You know, you're going to break up with a girlfriend, or you're going to crash your car, or whatever it might be. Okay, what do you notice after every low? You found your way back. It's because you've got the power to do that. That's a good life, a life well lived, I reckon. You need a few scars, successes, failures, whatever that means, but you need a bit of all of it.
You mentioned that you don't like some of the, I don't know if behaviours was the term you used, but some of the things you see going on with young people. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's why I'm really passionate about what you guys do and the philosophies around. You're much more than a gym. The gym, to me, sells the whole opportunity short. So there are key things now that, I was reading an article last week and there was a startling line in it that said childhoods have been stolen over the last 10 to 15 years. And I thought, wow, what does that actually mean? I've got three young boys, teenage boys, so obviously I'm acutely in that space. You know, 2009, 2010, we get the first phones that have a front-facing screen, right? So track anxiety and depression, depressive disorders since then, and there's been a rapid decline. So what's happened? There's a multi-cohort of stresses or influences. It's not, we look for a smoking gun, but it's never one thing, right? So screen time's increased. Sleep has gone down for young people. Movement, exercise has gone down. Last week, a study came out from the States, and kids in the States, teenagers are spending 9 hours a day on smartphones. So the opportunity cost is incredible. So if you're spending 9 hours there, what are you missing? Movement, social connection, sleep are three key ones.
Yeah.
So what do you guys do? Why am I really passionate about young kids through Jungle Kids getting involved in Cabarita is because there's a social interaction for 10, 15, 20 young people, right? So they're turning up and they're learning communication skills and they're building mateship and friendship and all of those really important things. They're moving. We don't move the way we were designed to move. You know, you go centuries back. We've evolved. It's profoundly different now. So the links between movement, physical activity and mental health, they're not separate two. They're all part of the same equation. And then the recovery aspect. There's also the other part of it that I think is critically important is the recovery cycle and understanding what recovery and respite looks like as an athlete, as a Jungle member, as a young person, right? So where are your pockets of space for the downtime, for the recuperation, for the time to de-stress? So all of that occurs within what you guys do. That's why I passionately support it. I'd love to see more young people. I love what it does for adults, but I'd love to see more young people get those opportunities.
Do you feel like the focusing on the younger people sort of, because, yeah, like everything you're saying there is preaching to the choir, right, for me to hear. There's an acknowledgement working with adults that you're coming in late in the game. It's like, fuck, we're trying to make changes to something that's already quite set in its ways, which presents its, you know, a unique challenge because there's many years of practiced behaviours and, you know, mental frameworks and stuff in yeah. place. Whereas with the younger population, there's less of that. You can have more of an influence, somehow more interventionist, you know, perhaps less effort required for a better outcome, you could argue. Was that something deliberate in wanting to work with the youth, or was it some connection? Like, was it actually just with young people where you're like, I'm passionate about helping them?
No, it was very deliberate. So, you know, when you start anything, you don't start with a full solution. You start with probably a problem, right? And the problem was, and this my co-founder and I had the discussion really early, we're just really uneasy about what was happening to a generation of young people, right? With kids of our own, a lot of I've coached everything from under eights, you know, in Aussie rules football, right through to elite level athletes and everything in between. But when you look at a problem, and if you feel like you have experiences or resources or a drive or an appetite to sort of step into it, you can sit on the outside and go, oh, let's talk about that problem. Or if it really means something to you, you've got to step forward. And you step forward initially not knowing much. So your first 6 to 12 months, it was a lot of seeking to understand, a lot of learning, a lot of understanding, well, why are these things happening? One of the key things that came out of that very clearly, and it still exists right now, the government spent a lot of money on mental health. Only 2% of that funding goes to preventative programs. Staggering.
Wow.
So I'm a simple guy, right? If you want to actually change something, you've got to get to the source. There are incredible programs, amazing support groups that do incredible things once issues have manifested. So there, it's a downstream approach. So when we saw that gap in, you know, young people getting that opportunity to, you don't build immunity, but you just build understanding and skill sets to help you navigate life. That was the space where we deliberately wanted to go. So we started with year eights, so 13-year-olds. That was our first workshop. We're now down to year fives. We'll probably go a little bit lower, down to, you know, year threes. And we work right through to 18 years of age. So the earlier the better. A lot of people will tell you when you coach or you teach or you mentor, you know, wait till they get old enough to understand. I think that's a cop-out. I just reckon the concepts from the day you're born to the day you die, the fundamental important things remain the same. Health, life skills, self, purpose, your community, they're important from day one. And if you live to 95 or 100, they're important on your last days too. So find a different way to teach the concepts. Whatever that looks like, if a kid's 6 or 7 or 8, just find a way.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It kind of makes me think of when you talk to any personal trainer that's been in the game for a few years, and they often go through this phase where they all like to say, I like working with like people who are really motivated in their training and like already in it, like kind of more of an elite level. And it's like, yeah, you want to work with that because it's easier, because they're good at taking orders and, you know, they make your job, you know, whatever, smoother.
Yeah.
I've coached a few kids' classes in our gym from back in the day, and I wasn't ready for it. It was just, I'm like, fuck, I'm not equipped to deal with this. You know, there's a level of tolerance and patience and understanding and all that stuff, which, you know, I can imagine changes from someone in year three to someone in year five, someone in year eight. So it is its own skill set, if I'm not wrong. Tell me, if I, boys and girls?
Yep.
Or is it, it's not largely boy focused?
No.
Okay.
No, it's, there are some really good programs out there that, you know, will focus on, you know, particularly for probably young boys, what it means to be, you know, a good young man. That's really been challenged for many young males. You know, we're all familiar with Andrew Tate's influence and, you know, what male toxicity means, etc. It's a changing environment, right? We're a very holistic, inclusive program. I think it's important that different genders learn alongside each other. We've got to coexist. You know, we're all part of one community. So I'm very pro one world, one community.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways that we are getting, I guess, divided up. And we're probably very much the other way, where regardless of gender, race, socio-demographic, there's a place in our workshops because we learn from each other. I think it's important.
Tell me how it works. You've mentioned the workshops. I'm somewhat familiar with what you guys have done at Jungle Cabarita, right? Which, as I understand, was kind of a, you know, collaborative thing. How does Life Changer work in simple terms?
We have, there's different ways we, I guess, deliver on our, what I would say is our core curriculum, right? 90% of our programs go through schools. So again, sort of year 5 to year 12, interactive workshops, bit of an anti-classroom, lots of noise, music, high fives, great conversations, interactive activities that lead to outcomes and learnings, a lot of self-exploration, safe environment. Things happen in our workshops that teachers will come back and go, wow, I've been working with that kid for 2 years and I didn't realise that they were in that level of trauma. There's a thing that happens in our workshops, and the psych term for it is unfreezing. It's like sometimes you might not share something with your dad who you see every day, but an uncle drops around every 3 or 4 months and you might share it with an uncle or someone else because it's like it just changes the dynamic. That happens a lot in our workshops. The other areas we deliver, we get, we call them collaborative programs. So Jungle is very much a piloting collaborative program where the kids want to come, right? They want to come into that gym. They want to, whether it's elite kids that want to actually challenge themselves, you know, from a movement, or they might be preparing for, you know, rep basketball opportunities or football or whatever. So they want to be pushed in that sort of physical environment. But then there's an opportunity to, I don't think sport, you want to develop a great person or a great athlete. It's not just about kicking, throwing, catching, lifting. It's actually, it's all the other things that surround that. It's proven that if you want elite performance, whether you're an Olympian, professional athlete, what's happening with your family, what's your mental well-being, you know, your recovery, it's all of those elements that need to be addressed. So exposing elite kids to movement, and they want to be, the thing I love about young people is there's no limitations, right? The only limit, I love the coaches, junior coaches that used to say to me, oh, we can't teach them this yet because they're only 12 or 14. And it's like, no, they'll rise to the level. Challenge yourself in the way that you're teaching it, all right? So don't limit. Their capacity is limitless, all right? So find a different way to tap into that. So we had a group, I would have said it was 14 young boys from the Cabarita Tweed region. And they've all got appetite to be really good, right? You know, athletically. And we said to them on the first session, right, this is going to be challenging. We are going to test you. You're going to be safe because all of the prep work that the guys do in the gym, that's paramount. But it is going to test you, and it's going to test your, you know, where do you get to practice resilience? You know, you want to sort of, you need to fail. You can't actually build resilience until you face obstacles. It's not possible. So what are you going to do when a session becomes really hard? And you build confidence from those things, those sporting type things, that you can transcend into other parts of your life. So I see the gym opportunity with elite kids as being a learning environment for things that they can then translate into other aspects of their life. But then you've also got the young kids coming in who are like really early stages of movement. Climbing, I love watching kids climb. That's just one of the great things, right?
Because they just... Like fish in water, isn't it?
They just embarrass all of us. It's like watching a young... You know, if you've ever been into golf and you watch 10-year-olds on a putting green, no fear. They just putt awesomely because there's no built-up schemata about how they're going to fail.
Yeah, okay.
They just see hole, here's my mechanics, and they're awesome. And what happens is adults, we get all this built-up fear of failure, right? Yeah. Can't do this because I failed before, I've had a bad experience. So it's our mental limitations. So what I love about kids is they, if you get them in the right environment, there aren't any limitations. So I've watched, you know, Esther and the team work with, you know, they're young, you know, they're I'm guessing they're sort of 8 years of age, and they come in and they're doing two things. They're getting these amazing movement opportunities, and then within those sessions, they're working through a health and well-being journal, which just is some really cool opportunities for them to maybe explore some of their own positive traits, do a little bit of really basic level journaling, like really simple stuff. But it's
you prompt them with questions and stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of guided cool. journaling. If I'm a parent and my kid walks out of that session, I'm going, they're getting all the amazing stuff that comes from movement and sport, right? And they've actually got a group there that care about my son or daughter outside of that as well. That's a really powerful combination. And that to me is a great foundation for a young person to grow in so many ways.
The environment piece, which you mentioned as part of your sort of sporting journey and being around, you know, being in an environment that's supportive and collaborative and allowing you to express yourself and all of those sorts of things, actually more to the point, acknowledging that building a good person, strong values and all those things is what creates the strong athlete and the person that can, you know, go to perform in whatever arena. My assumption there is that that's not how it plays out all the time. You know, if we're looking at elite sports and stuff, it's very often that the player is seen as a vessel. Am I wrong?
No, you're spot on. I think good sporting organisations, they help the athlete realise, and these are rare, these sporting organisations, but they actually help the athlete realise that they are much more than just the athlete. You're more than the CEO, you're more than the owner of this business, you're more than the footballer or the basketballer, right? That's just what you do for a period or a chapter in your life. The organisations that really care about their athlete, they're building out all those skills and personal understandings that are going to stay with that athlete well beyond their career. An ordinary organisation, you are a commodity, you get on the treadmill. Whilst you have physical value, that you are used up, and there's benefits for you as an individual, right? You know, you get paid as a professional athlete, and it's an amazing, amazing journey as well. But on the day where you don't have that value as an athlete, your relationship with that organisation almost finishes. So that's a really transactional relationship. Good organisations, it's not transactional. It's a true relationship. The only other way I can describe that to you is I was 18 and I got approached by two sponsors, Billabong and West Surfing Products. Two surf brands, right? And they wanted you to wear their gear. And I'm a surfer, always have been. And I went to, and this is no disrespect to Billabong, but I'll never forget, Patrick Lay was the owner of West Surfing Products. And he said to me, "Hey, we want you to wear our gear and all of that stuff, and you become part of our family." And I was like, "Oh yeah, that sounds awesome." And he said, "And once you're part of our family," he said, "when your football career finishes, your relationship with us doesn't." He said, "You're part of our family for life." And I was like, "We're done." I still talk to Patrick now. I think it was about 6 months ago, he's got some new wetsuits out and my boys were looking for wetsuits. I just called him, he goes, "Mate, I'm sending up three wetsuits." Huh. But it's...
How cool.
I'm not used to him really anymore. You know, I don't have the... I'm not a professional player or a coach. So there's no leverage really he can get from me other than, you know, goodwill and me talking about him right now, right? But that's a great organisation.
Biggest podcast in Australia.
100%. So there you go, Patrick, you are a legend.
That's very cool. That's really sort of leading with your values, huh?
Yeah.
Talk to me about the sports career. Give us the background on that. We sort of touched on it last night. It's all intimately linked with different species of birds. I remembered this morning, I live on Swan Street, which and it borders with Pelican and Halcyon. And so the bird thing speaks to me on many fronts. Talk to me about that. Give us like the synopsis of the career.
It's sometimes a bit self-indulgent to sit and go through all the ups and downs of your sporting career. But look, short version, sport in some ways I think chooses you. I was one of those kids that I would just get lost. You know, you give me a football and a park and 6-7 hours would just go by. It was the creative side of sport that I loved the most. You know, even now, even though I don't, there's a time in my life where I could never imagine not touching a football on any given day. I don't do that anymore unless I'm having a kick with my boys, right? But if I still pick up a football now, it sits in my hands a certain way because I've done it so many times, you know, and there's a familiarity with that. So for me, it was creative play, getting lost in, well, what way does the ball move when you kick it, and can I kick it around that post, and building the curiosity. I think for anyone that masters anything, you've got to be curious and lean in. So I used to love that experimentation, creative side of it. And then I was fortunate that I was good. You know, whether I'm good because I practiced and loved it so much, or your predisposition to, you know, to be good at it, whatever that, I certainly put in more than the 10,000 hours. I probably would have done that in about 3 months back in the day. I can remember sitting at my local park, having a kick of the football with my childhood mate across the road. His name was Eric Peterson. I haven't seen Eric in probably 30 years, right? And I remember saying to him, I was 11 years of age, and said to him, I'd said this to him just to see if I'd get a response, right? And our local team was South Fremantle Football Club, a really big club. We get 25,000 people turning up every weekend. I said to Eric, I think I want to play league football for South Fremantle Bulldogs. And I thought he was just going to shoot me down, right, as your mates do. And he just looked at me and he went, said, yeah, I think you will. And it was the first time someone had actually validated that to me as a potential idea. And I was like, okay, well, if Eric thinks I can, maybe I can, you know.
And Eric Peterson reckons.
Yeah. So thanks, Eric, for the validation. And then it was just...
That's so sweet, imagining that conversation between two young boys. Yeah.
I know exactly where I was standing on that part. Like right now, I can picture that moment.
Wow.
Crystal clear. And then it's led by passion. For me, it's led by love and passion. I love the game. I love sport. And that, you know, if that's your starting place... the time that you invest in it is not, it's not, it's easy. And then you go through all the pathways that lead you to opportunities. So, yeah, ended up having a 10-year career in the AFL with all the highs and lows. And it's funny, you know, at the time the lows are really challenging. The injuries, missing out on a grand final, you know, lots of those moments, which at the time... they're crippling. You just feel like the world's caved in on you, you know. I played 110 games but probably missed about 110 through injuries, right? Mm. And I'm not saying that for pity, because right now I look back and go, I love all those things. That I love the time when I was buckled and wanted to give up because my body was failing, but I still tried to get up and go again.
That's the graph, isn't it?
It is the graph, right? So now... they're the things that I draw on, and they're the things that I think about when, you know, we're designing workshops for kids, because that's my lived experience. You know, I also don't buy into success and failure. I think it's the biggest load of crap that society has built up. So failure to me, my version of what failure is not attempting something or not actually putting yourself out there. It's not how society generally measures success and failure. It's not the trophies. It's not the
Win or not, kind of like kind of binary.
Yeah. Winning and losing is two sides to the same coin. You know, it's they're irrelevant. Life's a process. I really believe that. So if you haven't failed, you haven't actually stretched hard enough. So... I was reading something this morning, actually, and a dad would have dinner with his kids and he would say, He's completely changed the paradigm around success and failure. So his question to his kids once a week was, so tell me how you failed this week. And if they haven't failed, he goes, well, why haven't you failed this week? Come on, let's get out and fail, right? That when you're too scared to fail because you've got society pressure or you're going to feel judged, you're limiting your capacity. That's hard for young people because we feel like failure, there's a judgment attached to it. I've been sacked as an AFL coach, right? That's pretty public. You know, that's media pulling into your driveway and taking kids out of school and going on a holiday for a week just to get away from all that, right? I never felt ashamed. I never felt... I was never in the fetal position. Disappointed, angry, bitter. Absolutely, you go through all of those emotions, but at the same time, anything worth achieving comes with, you may not be traditionally successful, you may fail. That's okay, go for it, right? At the end of the day, you know, if someone's going to write something on my tombstone, he had a crack. I don't care. People can judge whether I've been successful or not by their metrics. Mine are, I'm going to push it to the max. And there's going to be failure within that. Good. Because I'm going to learn and grow from that.
Was that something that was taught explicitly to you? Or has this been something sort of observed and, you know, articulated in your mind over time?
It's a really good question because I think it's harder for a young person to understand that that philosophy, because we feel like we've got to be perfect, or we feel like every time we're getting measured. It's with reflection. It's why when you do that life graph, it's a really powerful thing, because you know, I'm over 50 now. I've got miles on the clock. I know that I can look back on my own journey and go, yeah, okay, there was a failure there, or that wasn't as good as you could have done, or circumstances made that really challenging. But I look back on all of those things and go, yeah, that's great, because that, well, here's the example, right, is we're putting together the foundation and really settling on what life changer needed to provide to a young person. One of those moments, I reflected on the actual day I got sacked as an AFL coach. And I felt quite calm and composed, right? So I was like, why was I? You know, why did I not feel broken? And it's because my own positive self-identity, you know, my family connections, my understanding of what I stand for, I knew I was still going to be okay. That's what I want kids to have, because they might not get sacked as an AFL coach, but they're going to lose a job at 21, or they're going to feel like they don't have a friendship group, you know, in year 10. And those things are massive at the time. What you want is a kid to have enough of their own positive self-identity to still make their way through. And right now, statistics show that too many aren't. You know, youth suicide stats in Australia and New Zealand are horrendous, and over the last 20 years are trending negatively. So I come back to your early question, why? Because that's not good enough. That is not good enough. And we all have opportunities to lean into that space in different ways. As parents, teachers, coaches, mentors, all of us come into contact with kids, either our own or others. We're all in this together, this thing called life. So we've got to hang a bit tougher together, I reckon.
Do you ever feel in this process of, you know, you have your avenues of influencing these kids, workshops, collabs with the gym, whatever other sorts of events you put on, the school programs and whatnot, do you ever feel a sense of futility?
Yeah, often. There's 3.5 million teenagers in Australia. That's a lot, right? Workshops alone, we'll get to 70,000 kids in workshops this year, right? We'll probably get to 100,000 next year, or 120 or whatever. There's still 3.5 million kids, right? So there are times when, you know, you feel, and there's a lot of outside influences. You know, a kid comes into a workshop alone, there can be catalyst moments always in workshops, really significant moments. We have moments where a young person, particularly one who's in a really pointy end of challenge, will share something in a written activity that brings tears to your eyes. And that person can then, straight from that moment, get counselling support. I used to think it was a big call to say, well, you know, at times I think we might save a life. I actually proudly stand behind that. I think at times we might. You think of a moment when you are completely isolated or alone as a 12, 13, 14-year-old facing a whole myriad of challenges which many kids face. Life hangs in the balance in some of those moments. So just that one moment can be critical. If all we do, if at the end of all of this, if one kid has deviated to a safer place rather than the place maybe they were considering, happy days, right? I think our goal by 2025 is to impact 1 million kids annually, right? Now that's a combination of workshops and digital resources. Last September, we started our digital resources, which teachers now access. So we're 6 months into that. We've got, well, by the end of this year, we'll have another 500 schools in Australia through the teachers accessing life-changing content, delivering that in classrooms. That'll take us to around 500,000. If we get to 750,000 or 600, tell me off for falling short. You know, I'm okay with that. But that's a beacon on the hill target for us.
Incredible.
That's cool. A team, I get to sit here, you know, and it's not me. It's our team. Our team is phenomenal. You know, we've got about 50. I know with our 50 team members at the moment, I can tell you why every single one of them is involved. Personal story. Want to make a difference. You know, those, I guess the cliche, but what our team do transcends my capabilities by 1,000%. I'm so proud of what they do.
I was lucky enough to meet some of them in Cabrita, wasn't I, at the end of last year?
Yeah, handstands. We had the handstand comms go.
Yeah, lovely humans.
They're a great group.
Nice crew. Esther, can we can you weave it into what you guys have done at Cabrita Beach and sort of, I understand there's some future plans for you guys.
Yeah.
Tell me, you know, obviously I believe you met Scott early in your gym journey. I mean, it's still pretty fucking early, but really early. And I remember when you guys first connected, because you were like, hey, I've met this guy, he's a legend, we're doing this thing, and I'm fucking all in.
Yeah.
And you were kind of vetting it with us because it's like, can I collab with some other organization? We're like, wow, yeah, sounds amazing, go for it. But it seems like there was an alignment there immediately and that things just happened really fast.
So fast.
Talk on that a bit. Feel free to jump in, clarify the story.
How did we meet? Scott came into the gym, and anyone that comes into the gym is like a potential member, right? So that's where I thought the conversation was, what it was going to be about. But Scott came in and wanted to talk about these boys that were turning up in his garage and training with his sons. And a vape shop had also just opened up down the road.
Yeah.
And Scott was so dirty about it. But the point was, he was expressing his concern for youth in the area. And if there was, you know, positive programs, positive role models in the area, that, you know, how can we partner? How can we put those resources to good use? And I don't think he even spoke about the foundation. Like, it was just about this group of boys. And so I said, yeah, cool, we'll get your details and we'll talk about it. And so we sort of designed a strength and mobility program that would partner with some skill acquisition stuff that Scott would do with Shane, and Alex and I would do the strength and mobility stuff, and it would be like a 10-week program geared towards this AFL group of kids from about 13 years old to 20 at 19 maybe. Yep. You said there'd be 8. And by the end, there was 22 boys in our gym. It just kept growing. No, that was yours. and
averaging
eight, 20.
I mean, they were hanging out the windows, but it was just incredible. It was it. I don't even. It was really interesting because we knew that what we were doing was important and that it could make an impact. And now we had this pilot study of, you know, 20 boys that we could identify what was lacking in sports training or like in the strength training that they might be exposed to in gyms, right? Like they're just out there pumping muscle, getting on eBay, buying things to like grow muscles. They just shouldn't be, you know, pre-workout, all this sort of stuff. So we were like, what about their joints and their tendons? You know, what about social connection, all those other things that we think are more important than just building muscle? And then we brought them in, did a movement screen, identified all the things that we weren't surprised at, you know, knee tracking, you know, poor core stability, all those types of things. And we worked with them for 10 weeks, retested them at the end, huge improvements across their movement screen. The movement screen is something that we do in the gym with adults as well, but it was just really interesting to see it done with teenagers, boys that are like little baby giraffes. And yeah, it was amazing. It was an amazing 10 weeks. We got to hang out a lot. But that's how we met. Like you, and then also you eventually joined as well. So there's been that too. The tightest hips in all of Cabarita Beach.
You're talking about the screening. I remember going through my screening and I didn't, nor would I, mention that I, you know, played AFL for many years.
I thought you'd been in 5 car accidents. That's what I thought.
So we're going through the screening and it was actually fascinating because I just get curious on certain things. So when I first walked past and saw the gym in town, again, at the same time as a vape shop opened, I was like, this is awesome because this is actually what a small community needs, right? You need your sporting clubs. You need your places to congregate around great things, right? So when it opened, I was straight away, my mind went to these kids. I had 4 kids turn up in my garage one Saturday morning. I just left the garage door open. And I've got 3 boys. So I think I might have said to one of my boys, come around. There's a little home gym in the garage and I've got more footballs and stuff. That's just, the garage is full of, right? So anyway, I woke up at 8 o'clock and I could hear noise in the garage and there's 4 kids in there, you know, just on the squat rack and blah, blah, blah. And I was walking out bleary-eyed with a coffee. I was like, huh. I said, so it's 4 of you. I said, okay, we'll do an hour in here and then we'll go for a run and go and have a kick or whatever. And then next week there was 7 and then there was 10. And then, you know, I'd hear my garage door go up on a Saturday morning. So I was, and I'd, there'd be 15 kids in the garage walking through the house and it was like, okay, well maybe...
Where's the protein powder, mister?
Yeah. And I'd walk into my kitchen and there'd be 3 of them sitting in the kitchen, you know, which is awesome, right?
Starting to turn into your grandma's place.
100%. Wow. Obviously the gym opens and it's like, okay, well, this would be amazing. So these kids got an appetite. You're not having to motivate them. You just got to go, well, here's the opportunity. Here's the environment. Let's go. So, you know, that's when I spoke to Esther and said, oh, you know, maybe we can do a joint gym / football thing. And I think initially it was like, you're right. It was, I think we'll get about 8 kids. And then it was like every 2 days, I think there's another couple of kids that want to come. And then Shane Crawford, who lives just up the road. So Shane's a Brownlow medalist, AFL, great guy. He starts coming in as well. So these kids are getting amazing strength, conditioning, movement, functional work, you know, from, you know, Alex and Esther, etc. And they've got a ex-coach and 2 AFL players just leaning in and talking to them and having a lot of fun. Shane and I had a huge amount of fun. And I really look forward to doing the next group, actually. And it'd be awesome to expand it out to, you know, a girl group as well, right? Love coaching girls, and whether I'm the one that does it or not, but I've had some sessions with young girls down in Coolangatta. They're very different, particularly the AFL girls. They're so much more respectful than the boys because they're new to the opportunity of getting good coaching. So the boys can get a little bit blasé, you know, because they've been around footy for a while, but the girls are awesome to coach and their appetite is huge. So if I was ever going to get back into coaching, which I'm probably not, I'd love to go and coach a team of girls.
Right on.
Love to.
So you want to do another one, hey? We haven't talked about that. Is it 40 boys this time?
Well, your gym's getting bigger. I know you just made a little extension out the back to create more space, which was needed.
Oh, my God.
Those groups will – they'll demand it. Mm. You know, they'll want to do it, so yep. That's great.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Is there any – sorry to cut you off. Is there any barrier – you know, is there a cost involved for them? Do they – or is it an open kind of thing that any kid could access if they're at the right age?
So that particular one was run privately where the parents funded. That was really cost effective, super cheap because it was a pilot thing.
And which, to be clear, it absolutely should be. Like for you to give your time, especially when you're setting up the business. Yeah.
It was high value for sure.
We were talking about before that sort of attachment to like people drawing a – running a charity but drawing a wage and how people go, well, if it's a charity, why, you know, but you need to fucking live.
Yeah, look, you know, this was like it was a high value program. You know, there was clear outcomes that we were wanting to achieve. We demonstrated those and it's going to help them. It's going to save kneecaps and, you know, backs and hips and shoulders, and it's going to improve their performance. So like it's a super high value program. We don't shy away from that. And what we want to do now is actually open it up to, you know, girls and boys across different codes and sports. You know, any kid that is interested in coming in and doing, you know, strength and mobility programs that are going to support their sport and their growing bodies. Like we want to start offering that to anybody that's interested, you know. So we're going to be doing that in the next couple of weeks, and we're going to continue running our Jungle Kids program as well, which is our term program, and that's really around foundational calisthenics and gymnastics and partnership. And then we also do our mindfulness practices, so we do things like Scott was saying, guided journaling, gratitude, active listening, you know, role models, just talking about those kinds of things. So there's two different youth programs there, one that's elite performance training and one that's Jungle Kids. So those are the two programs that we'll be doing. That's where the future is for that. And Life Changer helps us with the, you know, the workshops that we do or the small activities that we do in each session. And then the way that we give back is we donate 50% of our profits from all of those youth programs back into Life Changers so they can continue to deliver their preventative mental health workshops in schools as well. So, we love it. We think it's so amazing. And, you know, if people are in a position to be able to invest in their kids, you know, resilience and sports training, that's amazing. But then we want to be able to give other kids that opportunity by, you know, giving that back to Life Changer, and they can, you know, help other kids that don't have that access, you know. So we're really proud of it. We just think it makes sense.
From Life Changer perspective too, I think it's really important that – I think having some skin in the game, no matter what it is important. So I think there is a cost, but from a Life Changer point of view – and I just want to make this really clear too, particularly with the elite programs. Shane turns up for 2 or 3 hours. There is no payment.
100%, yeah.
I'm doing it. So the reason why I do it, there's no money for me in it or for the foundation. The donation that we potentially get is amazing. But even without that, the reason why we do it is because this actually moves us another step closer towards our goal and our vision, which is to make sure that young people live great lives, right? So, you know, we're thankful for the opportunity to, you know, work with kids in that gym and outside. We had them running up and down Norrie's Head and Cabarita, but...
That's the headland just off the beach there?
Amazing footage that we got of that, which was cool.
So those people are... You know, as in our foundation and myself and Shane, it sounds really cheesy to say we're donating our time. I feel lucky that we can go there and work with those kids. But we're not doing it for, we don't get paid for that. Nor do we want to. It's not relevant.
No, like Scott walked in wanting to help locally. Like he's already making huge impact, you know, in Australia, New Zealand and beyond, but then also wanted to help in his hometown, you know, with kids that he knows and, you know, even just kids in the area. Just from walking around, seeing that there's a need in our town and wanted to make that opportunity happen. Like, incredible, incredible.
I've got to thank the vape shop. Honestly, the vape shop,
I was going to ask, when do we firebomb that joint?
Well,
talk about it after.
Another story. He's 10 metres away from the bus stop. Kids.
Wow.
Yeah, so
I hear this has been strategic all across the country.
It's
opening near schools and
I don't get riled up by too many things, and I wouldn't classify myself as an activist really, but I'm watching 15 to 20 kids line up at the bus stop, you know, 7:30 in the morning, 8 meters away from the vape store. So I looked at that and I looked at the gym, and I went, where do we want these kids to be? I want them in the gym. So that was one of the little, I guess, catalyst moments too. So, it's been an awesome spot for kids to develop and grow, and I hope we can do more of it.
Matt, I appreciate you sharing the story with us today. I'm stoked that you guys have come together and have this thing going on, and yeah, I'm stoked to have met you, and it makes me think about what, you know, if there's something that could be done here at Botany, and so I think that's a, you know, or through any of our gyms. And I, that's a discussion I'd love to have, you know, when the time's right. But yeah, you know, thanks for having a passion about something and then sort of putting your money where your mouth is, you know. I think a lot of folks, I don't think any parent or adult could not resonate with what you've said is the driving force behind Life Changer. But the vast majority of people will never make an effort to do something about it, not even with their own kids. And I'm not saying that to have a go, but I'm watching this play out with my counterparts as a young parent, and I'm staggered at the just lack of interest or the lack of care that a lot of parents take with their kids and what they're doing with their time and spending all fucking day on the iPad or the computer and they're locked in their room. So it's like, it's one thing to be conscientious with that in your own household, but then to see that problem and to extend yourself to influence others outside of that is very noble.
Thanks, man. It's been great to spend time with you. It is really, I'll just say last thing if I can. It is very challenging for parents out there. You know, I'm trained teacher, coach, mentor. I fail daily as a parent, every day. Like it's an imperfect science, right? So to all the parents out there that are, you know, struggling with, you know, young kids, their own kids, going through all those transitionary years and the different influences that, you know, this generation's facing, go be kind to yourself. It's hard, but also be conscious to what's going on and raise your awareness and think about ways to impact the people that you love the most, you know, your kids. So don't have to be perfect. You've just got to care.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you. Last point, where can people learn more, get in touch?
Yeah, lifechanger.org.au, best place to sort of check out what we do and how we're doing it. You can always reach out with an email if someone wants to have a chat.
What's your Instagram, Scott?
Oh, Life Changer Foundation. I'm now you're making me sound like my dad. The Life Changer Foundation, you can follow us there. But our tribe is growing. You know, I'm a firm believer that it's not money that solves problems, it's people. So for whatever situation we've got ourselves in communities, we've got ourselves there and we can get ourselves out. So let's see if we can make the next 10 to 20 years an incline in positivity around kids.
I like that. If people want to get on the next Jungle Kids program or Elite program,
yes.
Where do they go?
Yeah, well, you can jump on our website, junglecabarita.com. There's a web form there if you want to get a call back or just DM me on our Instagram, which is at Jungle Cabarita Beach, and I'll come back to you. Exciting.
Awesome.
Thanks, Scott.
Cool.
Thank you, guys.
Good to see you guys.